Interesting. You'd love to laugh at Monkey Music Show, Tavon Lorena McKenna. How are you?
I'm quite well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for being on. I've been enjoying your music for years, and I'm usually like a electric guitar type of guy, but I do have a softer side. And I'm a big fan of good songwriting and good production and stuff. And so I've grown up with your music, and I can't think of how many times I think it started hearing your music and being way aware of you. It's probably The Mask in the Mirror for me was the first, and then I went back in earlier music because I think
Okay.
because that was everywhere I went. There was a period of my life where everyone's house I went, I saw that CD and that artwork. The album cover is very, it's monumental the way it, nowadays the way it sticks up. And we'll talk about that because it leads into the tour you're having. But you have a new album I want to talk about also. But one of the things that's really neat I didn't realize that you do is from the very beginning is you have your own record label. Your own music from the very beginning, which is incredible. It's almost like punk rock because, like, a female, the male dominated industry back in the 80s taking
Yeah.
charge of their business. That's pretty awesome.
I sort of assign it to my rural roots. I grew up in an agricultural community and spent a lot of time on the farm, and you have that rural farm kind of independence. Your psyche is developed where you become quite independent. It's a kind of a sense of security, really. I was very, very lucky. I maintain that music chose me rather than me it. But I was lucky to come across a wonderful book by a woman called Diane Rapoport, and the book is called How to Make and Sell Your Own Record. And I use that as my Bible. It explains so many things about the actual production of the music, or copyright, or marketing and promotion, budgets, technical things, and so on. So it was really excellent. And I had a couple of people. One was a publicist from Toronto who promoted concerts, and he taught me a variety of things as well. So I produced my first recording in 1985. I had borrowed the money my family had saved for my veterinarian studies that I wanted to go on to, but never did, and made my first recording, Elemental, in 1 week. I ran off 30 cassettes. I gave 15 of them away, and then I started busking at the market in Toronto on Saturday mornings to sell these cassettes, and then I ran off more and then left some on consignment in stores. But only to say is that I, armed with that book and a few people, I was able to, in a very organic and brick by brick kind of way, build. Well, I created three recordings from 85 to 91, and it was the success of the third recording, Parallel Dreams, that really brought the major record companies to my attention. And by that time, I was able to finance my own recordings. I was building and executing and financing my own tours. I didn't actually need a record company,
That's amazing.
but because I developed the capacity to actually produce all of these things and finance them, gave me a very, very unusual footing with the record company. I mean, it was Warner Music Canada that I signed to, and then I came to the Warner Music Group internationally through their Matrix agreement. So it was a very slow, long burn. Many people say, "Oh, overnight success," but often overnight success
So
is
yeah,
not
there's no such
overnight.
thing as that, or one hit wonder. I mean, those are awful words to say in the music industry to people. Like, really? I mean, but it's still. I mean, I'm even looking back now, like the model you did, it's still fantastic because that's like an artist's dream right there, being in control of their music from the beginning. But you were in charge of your production. I mean, you knew what you wanted to hear. I mean, your first album, your second album, you went and recorded like in churches, and you got the right sounds. I mean, that's like. Not something a young, inexperienced musician taking on the business world and sonically the sounds while they're still learning their as a performer. That's like a lot of different things going on,
Now, there's a lot of things going on there, true.
And I
It
didn't realize you
definitely
had did all that at once. I mean, that's pretty amazing to me. So I'm just like, I learned that part along with the music. I was like, oh my goodness. So she had all this going on prior, not just being a new artist and dealing with that garbage. You were dealing with the business end and then you're dealing with the production end. you know.
It and but it was manageable because it moved at a very small increments over a long period of time, or relatively, from 85 to 91. I mean, once I interfaced with the Warner Music Group, they really kicked in with respect to marketing and promotion, publicity. That was their main focus, while I produced the music and put ourselves on tour as that companion to the releases. So it's a very split brain type of enterprise. I mean, I still do it. I'm sitting in my office now. A couple of days ago, we came off, I don't know, a 27-date European tour, and by night I'm performing on the stage, but by day I'm working as management with my team of people. We're building the next summer tour in Europe, and so we're executing tours while we're building tours while we're administrating the last one. It's
Oh,
pretty
the energy
crazy.
you have is incredible. I watched a show last night, and I'm exhausted and wrecked. You performed 27 shows, and you got the energy. And I'm like, I can't even watch a show and get tired. I don't know the energy.
Well, I maintain it's a bit like an Olympic sport because you're moving every day. We travel on buses, and it's worse for the crew because they travel more on the buses overnight than we do. We more often than not we stay in hotels, but still, every day you're moving. I think there were maybe three times in the whole 5 weeks that we stayed in a place 2 days in a row. So psychologically, it gets to be very wearing. Physically, it's very wearing. So you have to really, I treat myself as an athlete first and then an artist. And I'm very, very careful about exercise, about sleep, about eating correctly, avoiding, alcohol and that sort of thing. So you if you look after yourself, you can protect your longevity, but you have to be pretty disciplined.
I think, and I talked to a lot of artists, and because it gets this point in careers or people's lives, their voices change a lot. Sometimes just naturally. Sometimes people have the gift, and they can be, you can be a Keith Richards and just, I don't know how he's even alive and still performing at his level. And then some people, no matter what they do, they're just not able to do it. I've gone back and listening to the new album, we'll talk about now, the Road Back Home, and vocally, and then listen to your early stuff. Like, I haven't heard a change in your voice. Like, it's like, how is it
Well,
not?
I think that's largely because I actually started singing when I was age five. My parents put me into piano lessons, and my piano teacher also had a children's choir, and she made it mandatory that all her ch piano students belong to the children's choir. So I started singing before I could read music, before I could read words. So my brain, ear brain was being, those synapses were being built at a young age, and singing, and you develop a sense of a relationship with your voice all through all those years. And she was very strong from a classical technique in terms of how to shape vowels and how to sing correctly, how to breathe correctly. And then as a teenager, I studied classical voice for about 4 or 5 years and built on that knowledge. So when I come to performing, I now am able to deploy, I may first and foremost, I'm able to protect my voice so that I don't damage it when I'm doing so much touring, etc. But secondly, is I know where the safe zones are. I know where the zones are where I might be using a different aspect or dimension of my voice to give it a color or a texture. One of the best examples of that would be on the recording, The Visit, when I sing Greensleeves. And we were joking around saying, "Oh, I wonder how Tom Waits would sing Greensleeves." And I was like,
We all
"Well,
know how it's saying. You can hear it right away.
So we on this tour I sang it, but every time I came to that song, I'd be singing it with a very, very different vocal technique that I felt the juxtaposition of the familiarity and the sort of sweetness of the song having this gruffer texture can bring in a different kind of poignancy to the song. I guess with respect to my voice and I've learned how to protect it. I deploy all the technique that I learned through all the years of learning how to sing. So
It's
yeah,
so
the
clean
road
though
back
and
home.
high though. It hasn't like I know you say that, but it's still so amazing to me because I've heard I'm a lover of music, and I can't believe how strong and clean it's just, it feels like it's just a fresh out of the box when I first heard it. Like, I can't, it's
Well,
timeless.
like I said,
And you can usually hear it in the voices sometimes. You can hear a little bit of the time, sometimes like a fine wine, you know what I'm saying? But yours is just so, know.
Well, I think let's say any classical singers will also speak to the importance of technique and skill, but also you have to treat yourself like an athlete. And when you're performing, it's like going into a competition, and you have to be very physically ready for that. So I understand those concepts. I take them seriously, and I would say that that's why. But with the road back home, it's that was interesting. I call it an accidental recording from the standpoint at this time last year, it certainly was not on the radar. We were supposed to have performed in Europe last summer, but because of COVID and the uncertainty of that, and I could get there's no insurance company that would cover me for any losses were I to get COVID. And I put up personally about $500,000 when we go off on a tour, so I couldn't really risk that. So we had last summer off. And I approached a local Celtic band, the Bookends, to see if they would be interested in putting together a 60-minute set, and we could perform at some of the folk festivals in Southern Ontario that had been asking me to perform for a number of years. So we practiced all last spring and worked up this material. And then close to the time of performing, I said, I think we should record this, even if it's just for our archives or for my archives, but we should record it in the event that we may want to release it as a commercial item. So we did, so we made it into a formal commercial recording. But it is interesting, even when when I think of the title of home, and how that marries with the imagery of the cover art by Barry McGuire, which portrays this, little hamlet at the bottom of this mountainous region. Could be in Donegal in Ireland or somewhere in Scotland or something. But I traveled to Ireland a fair bit in the early 80s to track down the music in its indigenous setting, which was often a pub. But also in Winnipeg, where I grew up in Manitoba, and when I moved to Winnipeg, I was part of a folk club that got together on Sunday nights, and a number of the members were from Scotland and Ireland and England. And people would bring their vinyl, and we'd share them, and we'd learn pieces off of them. We'd play them together. We'd sing sea shanties in 3 or 4 part harmony together. It was fantastic. And that was really where I got exposed to Celtic music. It wasn't that my family that there was much music like that around the house. So in a sense, that was kind of home base for me. That folk club, those people at that time, that material. And the material that we perform on the road back home really harkens to that time in my own career. Later on in 1990, 91, I attended an exhibition in Venice that was the most extensive exhibition ever assembled on the Celts. And up until that time, I was of the understanding the Celts were this mad collection of anarchists from Scotland and Ireland and Wales and Brittany. But in this exhibition, a lot of artifacts had emerged from former Soviet bloc countries like Ukraine or Lithuania or, in that Balkan
Everywhere.
region. And they were, so the Celts were this vast collection of tribes that had fanned out across Europe, into Asia Minor, into parts of what we now refer to as Turkey, like in Anatolia, and dated back to 500 BC. So in 91, that's when I really sort of turned a corner, shall we say, away from the traditional repertoire. Also observing there were many artists and bands that were performing it far better than I thought I could. I thought, I'm going to go and follow the history of these Celts and use that as my creative springboard. So when I came back to this recording and those performances last summer, and when I look at the artwork and I look at the mountains represent all those travels from 91 to the present. That took me across Europe into Morocco, into Mongolia, China, the Trans-Siberian Express from Vladivostok to Moscow, and come back to the little hamlet, the little village on a cold winter's day in Donegal, let's say. You go into the pub with the golden light coming, and you go in, the little hearth, the fire, the turf fire is burning, and the musicians are playing. And really, this project, The Road Back Home, is it sort of encompasses that whole journey.
I think it does, and I think it's I've always found your voice very comforting and very, not just epic, but it has like a happy melancholy to it, depending on what the song is, and it's always very comforting. And something about your voice, you put it on, it's like it's very calming, and it does feel like almost like home. It's different for everybody, but to me, like I can put it on, like it's a good focusing kind of bring me back into. I just feels like good times. I don't know. I don't understand the power of it myself to put in words, which is kind of a good thing to maybe not try to overanalyze it, you know. This is a great roadmap back to your history. And I think it's great for a lot of people to kind of go back because there's like the song selections you put on here and you chose. We kind of talk about that because some of them are, I've heard you do, and like Marry the Soldier, I love. I've heard you live before online. And I've seen that. So some of the song choices you've done were kind of, you kind of had to do, I think, because you're known for it, but other ones are kind of neat. Can we touch on a few of those? Because it's
Sure.
definitely
I mean, you
a,
know, I think to bear in mind that the song selection for those performances last summer probably are a bit different than I would have chosen were I to say, I want to make another live recording and let's go and find some place to do it. And I would have chosen slightly different songs. The songs that we did last summer were partially and I hope this isn't disappointing anybody, but very pragmatic. There were pieces that I had already performed some time in the past because I really didn't have a lot of time to learn new material. And more, I mean, if I had had more time, I probably would have gone digging around for more, you know, stuff that I hadn't performed before. But you know, the impetus was primarily just to go and perform at these folk festivals and do things that we could easily put together. And these were musicians I never really, well, that's not true. I had worked before on another special project called the other Under Winter's Moon, which is a winter Christmas project, but I hadn't done any of this material. So I'm not sure if you have certain songs in
I
mind
have the whole
that
thing. Yeah, I have the whole thing. It's
that
yeah. I mean, it's like literally from the very beginning. I mean, Search for the Lambs. Like now, I will say to me as a fan, like I've heard some of these songs too. But I think to me, I think it's a bonus because especially the way music is streamed and put out there nowadays, it's not organized properly, or whatever. But so as a fan, when they get this, they can just put it in whatever they listen to. It's together. All these songs are together. One nice spot, thought about, organized. You're tight with the band. It's like. It's a nice package because if you're a fan and you have one song over here and you gotta go YouTube to hear this version, like, you know, if you enjoy music, it's nice to have it all together and doesn't break it up. So from my
That's a great
perspective, I
thing.
think it's good.
Good, good, good. I mean, that's the thing about the pre-digital era, is that you can, you know, artists used to, and I still think of it as a con, you know, a kind of an experience, a 45, 50-minute
Love
experience.
vinyl. I'm a vinyl guy, so I get it. The beginning to end, I look at album concept, but I think a lot of your albums, that's the other thing I like about you. I mean, I'm not talking about album, but like it's really well thought out. You know,
Yeah,
the flow of your albums, there's a lot of work put into this.
There are a lot of decisions made in terms of the material, the sequencing, you know, the keys. There's and so that I like the feeling of bringing people on a kind of a journey where one song isn't like the previous one, and it's not like the one that's next to it. There really are distinctive regions and have distinctive even instruments and arrangements. So yeah, this was great fun. It really reminded me of those days back in Winnipeg. And I think one of the other really pleasurable aspects for me what is the last piece, the Wild Mountain Timepiece. Because back in Winnipeg, and when I was one of the first years they had the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and I was so excited to, and it was very, you know, it was really seen to be quite prestigious to appear at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. And at that time, I didn't have a harp. I was playing guitar. I taught myself upside down and backwards. I was playing like this or something. And I remember getting on stage with all the rest of the, you know, wonderful artists of the time, Leon Redbone, and I mean, there were a whole bunch of them. And singing Wild Mountain Time together with those artists and with the audience. And the audience was, you know, 8 or 10,000 people or more. And thinking the snapshot of time of this communal experience where people are actually doing and sharing something together in one place. And then it evaporates. Everybody goes to their campsite or to their home or to the city or whatever. And in this era of digital, I call it a digital nightmare, to be honest, and
I can agree with you on that.
a colonization by technology, is that we so seldom now have what those Greeks called a sense of agora, where we see and watch and hear and experience something all together at the same time. And that there's a sense of belonging and connecting with each other because we have that experience. The digital era now has divided everything up into like shards of glass, and people are in their own silos and cylinders consuming things, and it's more all about them, that individual person, than all about us. So for me, the Wild Mountain Time, and even the tour that I've just come off in Europe, or the one we did in the fall in the United States, the second encore, if we get to that, I invite people to sing the chorus with us if they know it, if they can. And it's a special, special moment because I realize that many people now in this era have never sung with other people and had that sense of agora. And so, yeah, so that's another part of that
I think it's
experience.
important. I think it's important. I agree with you. A lot of times I won't even listen to previewed albums now if I get they want to give me like one single. Like I need to hear the whole album as it is. There's a lot of people that do one song. I'm like, I want to hear as the artist intends it. I'm not a hit. You know, it's not like that. It's a whole piece. You know, it's thought about as a piece of artwork. You know, it's a musical soundscape. You know, like a movie soundscape is what it is. So to do it differently isn't fair to the artist.
No.
And live music is the best. And some of the stuff you've done, like I don't think I've ever heard anybody play harp and then hear electric guitar. I don't know who the guitar player was. I'm sorry, I don't know the name is. You're singing, I don't know what the song was now, but you're playing harp and they're doing electric guitar and you're singing with it. And the three sounds together. I don't think I've ever heard it sound so beautiful together. Like, especially, you know, like electric guitar, that they had the perfect tone with your harp playing. And as like, that's gonna bother me, but it was so beautiful together. And then your voice, of course, because your voice, you know, you're kind of flowing over it, but it's live. It's what we need in music is in this album, you know, obviously that
Yeah,
recorded
I mean,
live.
I think this really, yeah, I mean, I think the more people have lived the digital world for 20 odd years, and in an extreme kind of way during COVID, I think more people are slowly coming to the awareness that, however convenient and efficient that might be, as a species, we're still built for real human connection or connection with the real world, you know, nature, with wildlife, and so on. Our brains, our whole psyches, we're primitive actually in that way, and not in a negative way. And I think that this then goes right to the point in time we're in now with AI, which threatens, you know, until and unless we regulate, get that regulated very, very quickly, we'll have a proliferation of people won't know whether it's me singing live, really, or is it AI who's done a very sophisticated copy of it, whether it's me singing or even something I've written. And I think that, you know, this gets into a sub kind of conversation about my feelings that we need to be less consumers and we need to be citizens taking charge and taking ownership of our world and our society, and really encouraging. And I think most very serious roads lead to the unregulated technology and how much power and influence is in so few hands. And when one is talking about the creative industries, or more narrowly, the music industry, it's completely under threat. One half of the whole business was broken once Napster came in, and Spotify pays 10 cents per thousand plays, or Google Play 0.00013 cents, wherein we used to get paid 25 cents or per song on vinyl or CD. So it collapsed one half of the whole industry. And right now we're on the precipice of AI, of really finishing it, as well as many, many other industries.
I think the record label started and finished it from the very beginning, before AI, before all that. The record labels were pretty rough on the artists to begin with. They're just banks anyhow. I think, historically it's just been horrible for artists. And I agree with you. I think AI does not belong in art. I think the best part about art is making mistakes, like performing. Are they gonna, is it gonna sound differently? Is it gonna be a different note? Is it gonna be this? What's gonna happen? Is it gonna be a different version? Like the artist is the strokes, you can't recreate. That's the beauty of creating. You can use
Yeah,
the
I
robot stuff
mean,
elsewhere, but
it's been a
art
slippery
needs to be art.
slope, Yeah, I mean, it's been a slippery slope, even with Moog and all the different synthesizers over the years. And I was speaking to someone this morning. There probably, and there are, I know already, there's some very, very important roles that AI can play in, let's say, medical or military kind of applications. But I certainly feel that even if people want things in the so-called creative industries, which can be music, it can be journalism, there should be some little kind of stamp or some icon that says this was generated with AI. And then at least the person listening says, okay, well, I'll take that into account. And behind the scenes, rather than having all these companies scraping all our copywritten material before the law can come in and prevent them, that there needs to be proper regulation to compensate the people such as myself or other artists for their creativity. So that's where I'll be. I spend a certain amount of time leaning into the civic side of our society and democracy, because I certainly feel that it doesn't thrive as a spectator sport.
I agree with you. I think, and you're taking the lead on it, because a lot of people haven't done it. A lot of people just started talking about it. I've been talking about my show. I'm like, where is AI coming in on you on your videos? Is it, can it be a good tool for you? Is it not? I mean, when does it take over being a fun thing and not being over the creative part of your show? When is it, you know what I mean? And if you're not being the creative part, you're right. And maybe you should say AI, or maybe companies aren't going to take ownership, but maybe the people just have a grassroots thing and say, no, this is human made. Kind of like when you have people making, we're making our soap, we're making our stuff, kind of like the human touch kind of thing, because they're not going to admit they're making it. They're just going to mass produce it like they always have, you know?
Yeah, I mean, clearly these tech companies, I feel that they're racing with more developments that make it very hard for countries to bring in the regulation. When they bring in, let's say, an online harms bill, well, they're scooting, doing new things, so it's hard to, you have to keep updating the bill before you could present it and pass it. And I think citizens, who, as I say, need to really log in and make their concerns and objections known to their elected representatives while we still have them, before we slip into more of an authoritarian universe. I think we've learned a lesson about unregulated fossil fuels that started during the Industrial Revolution, and we're bringing this planet to its knees because it wasn't properly thought of and thought through and regulated when it needs to be done. And I think that we're looking at the same with all of this technology. And when we just in the subject of child and youth harm, it's massive to do with bullying and addictions and sextortion. So, I think that Citizens need to take charge of their own, not wait for the legislators who around the world in Europe and Australia, here in Canada, and I think in the United States as well, are trying to get their hands around this. But I think it calls upon citizens to take charge of their own environment and take responsibility and say, you know, something, I need to be thinking of more than just myself with respect to this technology. I think there need to be guardrails on it put first. And I'm going to continue doing things the old way or the analog way. I meant to wear my t-shirt. I have a t-shirt that says, I want the right to live analog. And I think, and that's not just being old-fashioned. And I think we're realizing this going back into the music business, you know, when you can actually physically hold an album or a CD, you look at the artwork, you study who worked on it, and so on.
That's I
That
agree.
is really
That's
the
anniversary tour.
which it was the we've just done we did the visit we visited last fall in one part of the United States and in part of Europe. This summer, we're actually doing the Mask and Mirror anniversary tour. And it's so and we've also are releasing the Mask and Mirror Live, which is actually a recording of the of that material that we did in San Francisco in 1994.
Oh, wow. This is
And
a definitely a road back home type of year, isn't it? Everything
yeah,
circles
so
back.
it's a very crazy year because we've got the visit revisited, we've got the road back home, we've got the Mask and Mirror tour, and then this other recording. And these things are all stuck, partially because some of them were conceived as anniversary projects, but with COVID, the anniversary kind of came and went. And so anyway, I won't say it's a mess, but it's certainly there's lots going on.
But it's like a musical hug back to your past, because it's so fun to celebrate special moments in your life. It's what it comes down
Yeah.
to. It's a positive thing. Your website, I gotta tell people, check it out. It's loaded with everything, your albums, your media, your tour information. It's just chock full, and
Yeah,
that's the
the
best
tour
point.
this summer is it's a European summer. I'm sorry we're not coming to the United States, but we do have people who sometimes like to join us out on the road. We start the tour actually at the glorious Herodian Theater at the Acropolis in Athens. And most of that tour this summer is in outdoor, really interesting ancient or historic sites. I think there's only two venues that are inside, and that's in northern Spain. So yeah, if any of your viewers, listeners are interested in joining us abroad, we'd love to see them in the Mask and Mirror anniversary tour.
That's the beauty of the show. It's all over the world. I got, that's everyone listens to everyone on a podcast and not on YouTube. Thank you for the time
Thank
today. It's
you.
been fantastic. It's been a